Welcome to the Sunday Times Politics Weekly, where we look at all the burning topics in our country. This week, we turn our attention to the National Dialogue, which was launched by none other than President Cyril Ramaphosa after much controversy over a whole range of issues leading to the withdrawal of some of the key actors who were involved in the run-up to the convention, which was held in Johannesburg. Joining me on the Politics Weekly to unpack the implications of the convention, which took place last weekend, and the future of the dialogue process, political analyst, as well as executive director of the Public Affairs Research Institute, Dr. Stembile Mbete, as well as Arena Holdings editor-at-large, Thembiso Msomi.
Terrible things are happening in South Africa. The leadership is doing some terrible things.
We will not be bullied.
Let the gold mirrors to U.S. were not just backers.
The president did want them to say, if you're going to fire, we'll take it as a declaration of war.
I can't be threatened by Zuma. I defeated Zuma.
You're dealing with Jacob Zuma. Every stage is a theater for him.
We're not sending help to criminals. We're going to smoke them out. They will come out.
There has not been agreement in terms of parties in the executive.
The executive must come here.
The people of Palestine, they're denied the right to enjoy the freedoms we so love.
Hey, welcome to the both of you.
Thanks for having us.
A lot of people were asking in the build-up, do we need a dialogue? Why do we need a dialogue all of a sudden? You know, 30 years later, why didn't we have the dialogue 5 years after 1994, 10 years? You know, why do we need a dialogue? I'm going to ask you to answer that question. I know you are not among the prime movers behind the dialogue process, but I'm going to burden you with the explanation. Stembile, should we go with you first?
Sure. So, you know, the idea of us needing some kind of dialogue or conversation or second CODESA is one that has happened, you know, that's recurred over time, right? Since 1994, really, I think since 1999. So if you think of the first parliament from 1994 until 1999 was a constituent assembly. They were put together to come up with a new constitution for South Africa. So a lot of that process in many ways can be understood as a dialoguing process to get different views, the people who were in parliament at that time to canvass different perspectives, different views for what eventually then went into the constitution. And so that was the first 5 years of our democracy. And then over time since then, and particularly, I think, after the ANC's 2007 conference in Polokwane and then the 2009 election, when the real sort of fractures, it seems, in the hegemonic or the dominant party and up until that time, were beginning to show that this idea of there needing to be some kind of relook, reevaluation of where we are as a country, what the decisions and the compromises that were made to enable us to get to a point where we could have a democracy in the first place needed to be reconsidered. What are the economic choices that we've had? So the idea of needing to have an economic CODESA. So looking at, you know, what were the compromises that were made about the economy on property clause, on whatever all else? And are those still appropriate in the present? We had, you know, COPE called its putting together of people before its formation. It had a dialogue, is what I think they called it at that time. And then you had, particularly in that period of the transition between President Ramaphosa and former President Zuma, and what seemed like was going to be a very fracturous kind of transition, a lot of people speaking about, well, you know, coming out of the Zuma years, then maybe the country does need to reconvene, to build consensus, to heal, to rebuild a different social compact. Let me see, Jonas Steyn was saying, you know, he'd written about it in his book. He mentioned it in 2023 at the Kgalema Motlanthe Foundation, inclusive dialogue forum that they do. And so this thing, it's a recurring theme, basically, is what I'm saying, in our political imagination and language as South Africans over the last 15, 20 years. Okay. It emerges for different things. And I think that what it comes from is this idea that we are so fractured as a nation across political lines, racial lines, class lines, all sorts of lines, and that we somehow need to talk with each other in order to be able to find the solutions for our problems.
I'd like for you to come in, and I want to add another layer to the conversation. Dr. Mbete says that this is a recurring theme. Now, I am saying South Africans have just gone to the elections 2 years ago to elect a government to run the country, to provide leadership, presumably.
So
this idea of a national convention where people say government must not be involved, or it must not coordinate or dominate, or, you know, however they couch it. Could it be seen as a vote of no confidence actually in government? The way people are stridently saying government must not come near this thing.
I don't know whether we can say vote of no confidence. But I think what is certain is that people started believing that the system was not working or was not sufficient, that you needed to do more. So if you look at, if you can go back to Mcebisi, for instance, he comes in, I would assume that he started writing his book to 2017 because it gets published in 2019. So his central argument comes from, okay, now state capture is over. What do we do going forward? So there was this euphoria about Ramaphosa coming into power, but he seemed to be skeptical, saying the system is falling apart. The agreement that we had entered in 1994 was no longer working. So the benefits that each of the sections of society were going to get, whether it was workers with the legislation or the black elite with the BEE and affirmative action, or white business being protected, and all of those issues, that agreement had run its course. So you needed to have a new conversation. But of course, as she says, the conversation had been going on. I mean, you can go back to Olomisa when they started UDM. He was already talking about a second Kodesa. So I think there's always been this feeling in South Africa from all walks of life that what we have is incomplete, that you need to do more than what you are doing. And then it didn't help that what happened between 2018 and the 2022 elections just made everyone realize that even though you say you've dealt with state capture, but the problems continue to worsen. Mm. So it made some people to believe that you need to then sit down and have that conversation.
Yeah.
This is the 2022 ANC elections.
I have to come back to you, Dr. Mbete. Now, someone might say, why do we need to have a citizen-led process, however we couch it, you know, such as a national dialogue, when we have elected people who are sitting in parliament, who have been meeting for the last 30 years, who are supposed to be our representatives? We pay them handsomely, and they meet every time to have the debate, in inverted commas. They pass laws, etc. Are they not aware of the critical issues, or has the system failed? That system of electing people and calling them public representatives. Shouldn't public representatives be speaking for us? Why must we now become politicians and find solutions?
Well, I think this is part of the then confusion and uncertainty about what was driving this national dialogue process and what was the purpose that this process was supposed to play. So, you know, we've spoken about this whole history of people talking about the need for dialogue. And sometimes it's been around, you know, needing to come up with a different economic consensus and agenda for the country. Sometimes it's around, you know, needing to address the issues of citizenship and, you know, who's actually South African, you know, when the first kind of anti-foreigner sentiment broke out in, you know, the attacks, the xenophobic attacks in 2008. There's always different things being used for it. What the underlying purpose of this as a citizens-led dialogue is has not been made clear from the originators of this initial of this process, the, you know, and many of whom have now pulled out. Because the point that you're making is, I think, a valid one, that, you know, we elected a government on the 29th of May, or we elected political parties who formed a government that was announced in June of 2024. We do know that, and you will recall that as part of the GNU's agreement, their memorandum, one of the clauses of it is to hold some kind of national convention or national dialogue to bring South Africans together to develop a new sort of social compact and to have a citizen granted agenda for this now coalition of 10 parties that are somewhat different in terms of their ideological and other leanings, so that this would then not just be an elite pact, but rather something with a bit more, or something whose program had a bit more common legitimacy than just being a decision amongst party elites. So through that view, you couldn't exclude government from this, because surely then, if they're then supposed to be taking the line of direction or line of march about, well, now that you've formed a government, is these different parties, we voted for your parties with your different views, but now you're working together. So when you work together, this is what we want out of you. That's one way of initially thinking about this. But what we've now heard from the people who initially started organizing this, the original sort of preparatory task team, is that their intention was for this process to be completely citizen-led and not have the government involved, and have the citizens presumably be the ones who are informing the government about what it is that they want done or what the direction should be. But at the same time, we know that the presidency was involved in this, or the president became involved in this, because the process that was followed was that it would be the president that convenes the dialogue as the head of state.
And I think that, let's talk about the linkages, just off the back of what Dr. Mbete is saying. Now, the I keep going back to the elections, that we have got public representatives who were elected by the people of South Africa. Then you have got a group of people, apparently it was like 1,000 people and 200 organizations. Yes. Mm. They're not elected by anybody. We don't know who they represent really.
Yes.
And they come up with a resolution, say, or resolutions. Let's say at the end of the process, of the dialogue process, however it pans out, there are resolutions. Who is going to implement those resolutions? Because my understanding is that the dialogue does not have any statutory or constitutional standing anyway. How would the two processes talk? Because the laws are made in parliament, or changes to the constitution or whatever changes would have to be in parliament. But the people who are making the recommendation have not been elected by anyone.
So the assumption is that once you've had the process of consultation, and it's not just the 1,000 delegates who were there at the weekend, but you also have to go back to ward level, where communities have their meetings, different sectors have their own meetings, having all these conversations. And then you come up with, I think, what was called a national compact. And that national compact is then going to guide those in government. So the actions that you are talking about there, at least as far as I understand the idea, are actions that go beyond the elected representatives and government. They touch everyone in society. So you will assume that there are certain actions that may be taken by business, may be taken by labor, may be taken by churches to deal with particular issues that are being raised. So everyone then has a buy-in. So that is the idea of how it happens. But I concede the fact that even from its conception, the ideas were not the same in terms of what the intention is, because there is a great possibility that maybe some of our political leaders may not have warmed up to the idea before the 2024 elections, but after seeing the outcome of the elections and realizing that their power is eroding, then they warmed up to the idea. But before it was not something they were enthusiastic about, you know. So there are those elements. It is also possible that we, amongst the foundations and other organizations, there are different perspectives of what they wanted to do. So for instance, if you take Mabandla's book, because I think he revived the whole idea of a national dialogue. He wasn't talking about the now. wasn't talking about this election. In fact, when his book got published before the election results, but he was already looking at South Africa 10, 15, 20 years down the line and thinking that the routes that we are taking, we can have these elections over and over, but they will produce the same kind of outcomes because of what had happened to our politics. So he was talking about a revolution of the soul of some sort where society start thinking about what kind of leaders do you produce. But I don't think that it is an idea that everybody shares.
Mm.
We just share the idea that there should be a national conversation, but what it's supposed to deliver, there are different.
Would you share the idea that the view that the system is broken and that the system, we cannot look to the system to resolve the issues that we currently are grappling with, whether it's unemployment or crime or economic inequality, etc. Would you say that's why people are looking outside the system?
I'm certainly convinced by that idea because, I mean, it doesn't matter now whether you're talking to people from the left or from the right. Clearly, there's just general unhappiness with where South Africa is, and there is no clarity as to where it is going. I mean, currently, I'm just reading Eddie Maluka's book, and he's arguing for a second republic. I mean, no one argues for a second republic if they don't believe that the first one has failed, So that is where South Africa is.
Yeah.
You look at, I think Mandla Radebe had a book that said apartheid never died, you're looking at all those issues. You can see there are conversations that are happening in South Africa. But what I think is frustrating for most people and what frustrated me a bit about the weekend was that people get to the meeting and then they talk about what is wrong, which we all know, and they list all the issues, but it's not clear as to then what is the next step.
Dr. Mehta, are we having a crisis of a failed or failing dispensation, whether we're talking the constitution itself or whether we're talking the parliamentary system that's supposed to be the outlet for the public sentiment or for voter sentiment or citizen sentiment?
Well, I want to just say one thing quickly around this distinction between the national convention and the national dialogue, because there's this idea that what happened over the weekend is supposed to kick off a dialogue process that's supposed to continue for 6 to 9 months and be organized at a very granular level at the ward level, with dialogues that happen in every single ward, 3 to 4 or however many, I don't know what the details are. And then the sector led conversation so that every sector, I think of the 22 or so that have been identified, will then lead these conversations so that at the end of the process, you'll have had a good few million South Africans, several million South Africans, tens of millions. Is it 10 million?
Yeah.
10 million South Africans who will have engaged in a conversation, not just about what is wrong, but then have come up with the solution. So that what the conversations that were happening on Friday and Saturday are not intended to have been the solutions conversations. And the people that were there were really there to be, to be the people who then go out to be the ambassadors, so to speak, for lack of a better word, of promoting this dialoguing process in whatever format or form it's going to take place throughout the country over the next 9 months, and that the people who are there are from different sectors, from different parts of the country. Now, whether or not that is possible, also how those suggestions, those recommendations from people are actually going to feed into the governance process. So to your question, right, about is this not then us saying that the parliamentary system that we have, that the democratic system that we have, that the constitutional system that we have has failed? Because if you need to do all of these extra parliamentary things in order to get or to canvass people's views, surely that's an indication that something is wrong. And I think that there's, and I'm going to sound like a real academic here, in the sort of, it's a, you know, there's, it's a yes and no kind of question, right? Or the answers. I think on one hand, in so many ways, the South African Constitution, and I say this repeatedly on different platforms, the South African Constitution has so much in it for participatory democracy. So from at all levels of government, so, national, provincial, and local, there's provision made for consultation, for people to be able to attend parliamentary committee meetings, provincial legislature meetings, council meetings. And in fact, our local government system is meant to be the place where that has the greatest extent of participatory and deliberative democracy, where people actually get involved in the decision making, whether that's around the development planning, the IDPs, whether that's around budget, etc. But what we also know is that these processes that are provided for in our constitution and then in all of our legislation since 1994, since 1996 after the constitution, all of these processes are really underdeveloped and underused by the officials, by the politicians. You know, work that we're doing at PARI shows at local level shows that a lot of local officials don't actually understand what they're supposed to be doing with this public participation story. And so it's obviously not satisfying for the citizens because they don't feel like they're heard, and or they feel like it's a tick box exercise. The officials and the politicians who are doing the process don't know how it is that they're meant to integrate what they're hearing from communities into their actual work. And there's not a whole lot of guidance that's given for that in the law. So there are a whole lot of processes and things that should be where this kind of dialoguing, conversation, whatever, should be routine in our system. NEDLAC, the structure, is supposed to be a place for this kind of compacting to take place, and it's not taking place. So I think that this is a reflection to some degree of some of the failures of the processes that we have, because we've got the infrastructure, at least in law and policy there, but it's not being implemented. People don't really understand how to use it. I do think that there is a second, so that's the yes answer to your question about like other things, other systems that we are failing. But I think that there is where I would say no is that we forget that the negotiations period after, you know, 1990 to 1994, we should think of it as post-conflict negotiations. You know, the sort of thing that they're trying to negotiate now between Ukraine and Russia. It wasn't just adjudicating a civic conflict amongst people. It was trying to avert a civil war after a great deal of violence in the 80s. And that period from 1990 to 1994 was the most violent that we've had in this country. You know, amongst the most violent that we've had in this country. And so it was just to stop people fighting, to get people around a table, to figure out some mechanics for some mechanism for the whole country, regardless of race, to be able to participate in the governance of the country. Enya, all other things about how the economy should be structured around, you know, even our local government system was left until 1998, you know, because it was difficult to... These other mechanics happened later. And so I think that there is value in saying, you know, this is the system that we created coming out of this really tense moment. 30 years in, we're not a new democracy anymore. Things are messy. There's a lot of problems. There's a lot of things that aren't going wrong. So do we want to look at the systems that we put in place when we were coming out of the crisis and say, does everything still hold? Is it the constitution that's wrong? All the people that insult is it the constitution that's wrong, or is it the way that it's been implemented? Is it the electoral system that's wrong, or is it the way, you know? So saying that, having that kind of re-reckoning as a country is, I think, a valid thing to do. And it's not unique to South Africa, you know? France is on its fifth republic. You know, many countries have rethinking, reframing at different points, often caused by crisis, often caused by war. And so this idea of, you know, given that we're sitting with all these multiple crises currently as a country, should we just look at the foundations of things and say, is everything still what we want it to be? I think that is a valid process to say that you want to undertake. But if you've got an idea of what the end of that process needs to be.
I think the one problem, though, is that people then raise the question of if we went through the NDP process, and then a document is adopted, and then nothing happens, or it's not clear. There are no set targets that we say now we've achieved this and that. What guarantees are there that after this conversation, there will be implementation? Exactly. I think that is a big problem.
But I wanted to go back to, so that we can go past the pre-convention issues. You've got this very important potentially process that's trying to come into existence. And then you have got a sitting president on the one hand, and you've got a former president on the other, and they are both linked to the thing, but they don't seem to be understanding each other or agreeing or to be able to give each other accommodate each other basically in a decent kind of way. Am I misreading?
That is how it is coming across, because it has not been clear as to what exactly would make them to disagree so much that one will say, no, I'm not coming. Although I can see that the Peggy Foundation is now saying, no, we were opposed to the national convention, and we were thinking that we were not ready to have it, but we are not abandoning the whole process of the national dialogue, which I think helps in a way, because it means they will find a way of coming back to the process, whether it means they convene another convention, because I've heard also president saying there's another convention in January. I'm not sure if that is when then they come in, or they come in before for that process.
Dr. Mbete, would you say what is going on between the current president and the previous, or are we in the media just seeing illusions that there is no such?
I think for me, the last 2 weeks or so of drama around this, the dialogue, the convention, will it happen, won't it happen, are indicative of the perfect kind of illustration of what Butste was saying earlier about, you know, people get spoken to about these things and then nothing ever happens. This country's biggest crisis is one of leadership and elite non-direction. Because
what does that mean?
Or elite failure, because it astonishes me that the foundations with in various foundations, several of them, which are foundations, in the names of, former heads of state,
and struggle
government, and then struggle icons. And then some of the other organizations that were involved in this preparatory task team. And the presidency and the president was invited into this by the foundations, right? Because their initial planning of this was that the president as head of state would be the one to declare and to convene the populace, in the population into this kind of national dialogue. So between them and the president and the presidency, and all of their senior people that work there, many of whom are very preeminent and have many grand titles and have done very important things, that amongst all of these elites, they couldn't negotiate a solution to this before everything blew up and the proverbial whatever hit the fan. I mean, that's extraordinary to me. Because if we go by the accounts, right, of the different sides, that, the initial discussions on this started happening in June 2024. I know there was a big convening that happened with some groups in September of 2024. The active sort of organizing of this has been taking place, it seems, since then. So people who have been in meetings together, who know each other, apart from anything else, outside of this organizing of this convention or the dialogue, they know each other. And that things could get so tense and so fractious that it plays out in terms of media statements and pulling out and in and all these sorts of things as a whole drama that obscures what the point of this dialogue and process originally was, is extraordinary to me. And I think that it should make us all really worried about the quality of our, you know, elite engagement and elite leadership, because this isn't a, now I kept on joking with someone that, you know, if you'd given this to Gokos Bomanyano at Orlando West Methodist Church, where my granny went to church, this would have been done. It would have been sorted. And so our problem, we know, we'll talk about the voters, you know, not knowing what they want or whatever, or being populist or being whatever. We often talk about South Africa's problems as if it's a problem of ordinary people, ordinary voters, you know, the non-elite. Actually, we've got an elite problem, because how the some of the most important people in this country could not get themselves together.
But if I
to resolve their disagreement,
you know, in one of the stories that went in the Sunday Times on the weekend, Khalema Mutlante, one of the things that he mentioned was that some of the people who were part of the organization thing were saying, if there is a possibility that if they can get the necessary support, they will ask for an election. Do you think that there could be a clash of agendas in terms of, in other words, what is being said, but what is not being said, being as important, and what is being said?
Yes.
So that people may be, for example, both presidents, you know, by way of example, will say yes to the national dialogue. But in terms of outcome, they may be looking at different outcomes. That if I'm a sitting president, would I support and fund a process that's going to say there must be an election, or to say I'm to blame for all the problems in the country?
But I think that this then points to the question of, is a national dialogue then what we need as a country? Because there are more fundamental problems here than just a convening people to give their solutions to how potholes should be fixed or to how to deal with water things, or what the education system should look like, right? And it's not clear to me that the things that are fundamentally being fought over at the elite level have anything to do with the things that people, that are people's everyday concerns. That I don't have a job. I have no hope in hell of getting a job. I've applied. I was speaking to young people yesterday, you know, about how many job applications they've sent out and nothing. The people who are saying there's no water. So I was told that I must start an ECD center, you know, because that's where entrepreneurship, whatever, but my area has water cuts. I can't run an ECD center without water. You know, so there's this disjuncture between, and I was unfortunately only able to be at the convention on Friday, but the things that people are concerned about have very little to do. People on the ground aren't calling for another election. They're calling for the water to run. And they blame the government that the water doesn't run.
And also, even if you were to have another election, what guarantee do you have that it will deliver a different
outcome? That the outcome will be different.
What we have right now. But I thought part of the problem, and I'm not sure whether this can be proven, but one of the president's biggest issues after the COVID crisis was to talk about this social compact that was supposed to be entered into by society. And he kept on promising, I think if I'm not mistaken, he had said that in 2021 it would be done. And it fizzled out. Seemingly business was not interested. And so they walked away. So I sometimes wonder whether he hasn't looked at this process and thought, here is my opportunity to deliver something, since I was unable to deliver the social compact. Now, if I can show that I'm gathering South Africans to talk about the problems that they have, then I would have done something. actually without anything tangible that that people can say this is actually the outcome.
But here's another element, you know, of the whole situation. I mean, you've covered South African politics for longer than most other journalists who are currently working.
You make me feel old. I am.
And I wanted to us to explore if we're saying citizen led, we're wanting a citizen led process, right? What would be the role of political parties, most of whom were conspicuously silent or absent in the convention on this weekend? Do they have a role to play in this, given that the reason for the existence of a political party is to fight the other parties? Our system is adversarial, so it's not a system that encourages cooperation and mutual support and national interest. So where do the political parties, where would they fit in a process like this?
So I understood the whole process to be saying that political parties come here and they do not dominate the process because, of course, they're always competing. But they are led by society so that they can even be given a chance to deal with the country's problems without looking at, of course, during elections, they'll be competing with each other.
And there's an election around the corner.
Yes, and probably they'll use some of the issues that are being used by, I mean, are being spoken about. But I think that the intention was to say that they get to a platform, to a process where everyone is just talking in general about what the issues are and how to resolve them. And so they work towards a solution rather than competing with one another. Whether that will happen is another case. But what I've been finding very interesting though, is that whilst we are talking about this formal process of a dialogue, dialogues have been happening. I mean, if you look at someone like Floyd, right? No matter what you think of his politics, these gatherings that he's been having around the country, they show me that people are interested in talking about the current is not working. So how do we change it? Maybe they are taking populist posture. Maybe others are believing in more right-wing thinking, but there are conversations that are happening in different parts of the country. So it's not really a bad idea that you have a national dialogue process that happens that is not driven by political parties, but that involves political parties. You cannot exclude them. As much as I also am worried about business, because from what I saw at the weekend, I didn't see much of business, or maybe sold to ideas of knowing who business looks like. But in that gathering, I was just wondering, okay, so we speak about unemployment, but the people who can actually resolve this problem, if they are not in the room, what's the conversation about?
Dr. Mbete, I wanted us to go before we wrap up. The president is talking about what, about 9 months for the process to run its course. I think my observation is that South Africans are very good at talking and talking. I think we alluded to the, but very short on delivery, on action, you know. I mean, we alluded to the NDP, for example, you know, that now the conversation now is almost like the NDP doesn't even exist. One would have thought they could say, okay, we start with the NDP to say, 20 years ago or whenever, we agreed to do these things. We said unemployment would be down to 12% or whatever the case might have been. What went wrong? Why have we not delivered? But it looks like we're wanting to reinvent the thing now and come up with new, look at the same problems, but come up with new solutions now, you know. Now, the question I wanted to ask is, the president seems to think we've got 9 months. A long time ago, there used to be a book, you know, when before apartheid was gotten rid of. It was called How Long Will South Africa Survive? How much time do we have to solve all these critical problems of unemployment, no water in the taps, crime, and all of that? Do we have a lot? Who can say if we've got more than 9 months? Are you sensing urgency in this or?
Well, no, I think that the 9 months is given because an election needs to happen. The local government election needs to happen between the beginning of November 2026 and the end of January 2027. If you consider that an election that is a November election is likely to be proclaimed around July, August, and if you want this process to be autonomous from or separate from party political campaigning for the election, then you would want this process to be finished a few months before the election is proclaimed and campaigning officially starts. Of course, we're already in campaign mode. We're already in campaign season. But campaigning, election campaigning officially is meant to start when the election is proclaimed. And so this idea of wanting this thing to be completed in 9 months, so that takes us to what? The April, May-ish, is in order to separate the dialogue process, or to resolve to finish, to complete the dialogue process before the 2026 election campaigning begins, so that the two aren't conflated. Of course, you know, the two are going to be conflated in people's minds anyway, given that a lot of these conversations are going to be happening at ward level. It is highly likely that it's going to be used for campaign purposes, because in a local government election, we're voting for ward councillors, amongst other things. And so, you know, it's ward councillors and then PR councillors. But so it's very likely that those sorts of election issues are going to be part of this anyway for a local election. But I think the timing, I think, is as much a function of that as it is anything else. But I think, you know, we do have a problem of political parties in this country. And I think it's an important place to sort of end or to conclude. And there needs to be some reflection amongst party leaders about what the purpose of their parties are, because in a democracy, all democracies, including democracies that have first past the post election, so where you vote for individuals or where there's direct election of a president, the political party is the base unit of the democracy. And parties are basically forms where people aggregate, they come together, like-minded voters that may agree on one thing, sometimes they agree on 10 things, but that come together, that form together into a political organization in order to compete for power and to exercise collective action in order to change society in the way that they want to be. That's why people participate in political parties. That's why people vote for political parties. Now, it is a serious indictment on all political parties, not just the ANC. South African people are saying that we don't feel like any of the political parties represent us or hear us. And so we need to use all of these extra election mechanisms or extra parliamentary mechanisms to be heard, because the people that are meant to aggregate our views and then to be acting on our behalf don't represent or don't seem to be hearing us or acting in a way that represents us. And actually, research that's been done by the Afrobarometer shows that South Africans are, as individuals, are amongst the, on the continent, have the least interaction with political parties outside of elections. And even during elections, South Africans are canvassed, are amongst the least canvassed people on the African continent. Political parties don't interact with South Africans off social media or off like the TV news. And so I think that there is a bigger conversation here about democratic representation, about how do we make the state function? Because you shouldn't need to be having these conversations to get the, you shouldn't need a dialogue to get the city of Johannesburg to close a pavement or to close a road after they fixed the water. But that isn't happening. Why isn't it happening? We shouldn't need a dialogue to fix the, I saw a statistic yesterday, it's 1,000 schools that still have pit latrines. When did Michael Komape?
Go through a decade.
So it's nearly two decades at this point. And so, you know, we're having lots of the same conversation. And I think we need to separate out One, the existential conversation about why does South Africa exist? Two, why does our democracy exist? How do our institutions exist? Yep. And does it work? We need to separate that out from the, do our democratic processes actually work for us? Do our parties represent us? And we need to separate that out from why does the state not function the way that it should. And then we need to separate all of that out from who the hell are we as South Africans? What is our social identity? Because that'll answer the question that Butste was speaking about business needing to employ people, etc. So those are four different types of conversations that it seems that everybody wants out of this national dialogue.
So lastly from your side, do you think that, as you understand it, as we all understand it, the national dialogue will get us to that point that you've just elaborated on?
The national dialogue will serve perhaps some of these four, one or maybe two, but it's not going to answer everything that we need in the four.
Well, I can only say that I hope that we do achieve something out of it. Because where we are, we cannot sustain this. And we can't just say we just leave it to political parties in parliament. The National Assembly is the most depressing thing. I mean, I thought it's going to be more diverse, more active. Now that there are, I mean, so many political parties and no one has outright majority, but even then, the issues that are being discussed are far removed from what people are talking about. So maybe this process may cause some of them to have a rethink in terms of how they are run. But what worries me most is that whilst this process is continuing, the process of going to the next election amongst political parties, especially the 2029 elections, may dominate their thinking beyond the issues that are being raised. Because you can see even with the ANC as the biggest political party right now, that the mood of the leadership is not to deal with the immediate issues that people are confronted with, but people are just jostling for 2027 with the eye on 2029. And that's what is worrying for me.
Well, we seem to have run out of time for our conversation in this episode of the Sunday Times Politics Weekly. And I would like to thank you both, my guests, for a very stimulating conversation about a very controversial but very important development that is playing itself out in our country.
Dr. Stembile Mbete, who's the Executive Director of the Public Affairs Research Institute, as well as Thembiso Msomi, who's Editor-at-Large at ARENA.
Thank you very much, both of you, for joining us. I'm Mike Siluma. Thanks for listening. Until next time, stay safe, stay blessed, and let's do good for our country.